This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Good morning, and welcome to the Business Hour. I'm Ron Camacho, your host. It would seem that there are many, many thousands, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands, and maybe even millions of people that have thought about writing a book or two or three, but very few actually get around to writing a book, and even fewer end up getting it published. But today I'm very pleased to have as my guest Valerie Joan Connors, author of three novels, Give Me Liberty, Shadow of a Smile, and her most recent work, In Her Keeping. Each a story of life's trials and tribulations, hopes, dreams, and the quest for a better life balance, but each with a very different storyline and very different characters. So today the business at hand is the business of professional storytelling, of creative writing, of having the discipline to write not only one book, but three novels that one reviewer has described as entertaining, educating, and inspiring. And that's my impression as well from what I've read. And so welcome to the Business Hour, Valerie.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here today, Ron.
Well, we have so much to talk about, Valerie. There are so many directions that we can go in. We could drill down into each book and spend the program just talking about the books. But really, I want to talk about the profession of writing, as well as the books. And people are endlessly fascinated by the path of any professional that's on the program, and particularly fascinated by the path to creative expression. So let's talk about why you chose to become a writer, and why write a book? Why not be a poet, which you might be as well? Why not write a film script or scripts? And of course, that could come later, and in fact, we should probably touch on that later in the segment. Or why not be the writer of lyrics and music and be a storyteller as a songwriter? Why a novel? Why a fiction writer?
Well, ever since I was really young, I loved to read. I loved to read books. And I sort of always knew that I wanted to write a book one day. I was just waiting for the right inspiration to come along. And my mother was actually a poet, and I never tried writing poetry. I find it frustrating because it doesn't always rhyme, and I think it always should rhyme.
It's so, almost like another language, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. I mean, different artistic expressions. You and I had a chat off the air about music and mathematics. Mm-hmm. They're different parts of your brain. They're different disciplines, and poetry is almost like a different language than fictional writing.
Yeah, it is. It is. And as far as a movie script, my second book, In Her Keeping, about a tiger sanctuary, I would love to see that in film because there's some, I think, very good visuals there.
That's exactly what I was thinking. In mm-hmm. fact, like many people, when I read a book, I make a movie. And that is the reason I think that so many people find that so many movies fall short of their expectations.
Yeah.
I have to remind some friends that, well, when you read a book, if you've got a good imagination, you're able to visualize what's being described mm-hmm. in the way that you choose to see it.
Right.
And so you're making your own movie. And if you go to a movie and you don't divorce yourself from your own impression of what it should look like,
right.
the movie might not fulfill your expectations.
Yeah.
Of course, there are people who feel like the story was so well done on the screen that they can appreciate the actual movie better than their own image of
mm-hmm.
the movie.
Yeah,
and in other cases, I have suggested just treat them as two different movies, two different interpretations. Just
yes.
You think of the director having their interpretation. You can appreciate your own,
mm-hmm.
and not try to compare them too closely. In your case, the Tiger Sanctuary in the book In Her Keeping, and we'll talk more in depth about In Her Keeping. I see a lot of potential, particularly because of the tigers and the big cats themselves. Mm-hmm. They're beautiful creatures.
Yes.
And the interaction between the characters, the human characters, and the tigers is something that I think could be quite striking on the screen. And I think one of the keys will be to sort of capturing some of those subtle nuances of that interaction that you describe.
Mm-hmm.
The book Give Me Liberty was your first book?
Yes.
Tell us about, give us a synopsis of Give Me Liberty. And while I'll follow that up with having you tell us a little bit about the inspiration, but give us a synopsis of Give Me Liberty.
Okay. Give Me Liberty was set in the late 1940s, after World War II. And it's about a woman who has the rare courage of a woman in those days to leave a violent, abusive marriage and take her 3-year-old child to New York to start a new life. And so that's sort of...
Well, you know, in fact, that theme of women being able to, mm-hmm. having the wherewithal to, whether it be just psychic strength or other resources, family, friends, finances to get out of a bad relationship and move to a place like New York City. And it's sort of a reoccurring theme. Mm-hmm. Just moving to New York City to create a life is a story all in and of itself.
Right. But in those days, women just didn't do that sort of thing. You know, they stayed in the marriage no matter what. And
Tell us just a little bit about Eva Larkin, that central character.
Mm-hmm. Eva is based on my mother, and the story is a fictionalized version of her first unfortunate marriage. And the story comes from things that she told me over the years of her life, bits and pieces. And I took those pieces and filled in the blanks. And how close I got to the real story, I'm not sure. I wanted to give her an option to have a different kind of life.
Was she around? Were you able to quiz her on some of the details that she had passed away by the time you wrote the story and had to fill in some of the details on your own?
Yeah, when my mother died in 2001, and I inherited her box full of poetry and other memorabilia. And in that box, I found a stack of letters between my mother and my grandmother during the 5 months that my mother was actually in New York on her own in 1949. And that was what made me finally sit down and say, this is the book that I'm going to write, because I think it's an important story.
What a fascinating legacy, mm-hmm. of insight through those letters. And how fascinating that those letters, those written words, should have served to inspire you to write yourself.
Yeah, she would have loved that. She wanted to be a writer, and that was part of her dream of going to New York. She wanted to be a writer, and I think she would be very happy to know that that's what I'm doing now. I think she would appreciate that. But a fun story. In among those letters, I found something that she had submitted to Harper's Magazine, and it was a poem. And inside the envelope, I found the rejection slip and the poem. So in Give Me Liberty, I published her poem for her.
Oh, yes, that's what a nice touch. Yeah. What a tremendous tribute to your mother.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Shadow of a Smile. Now,
Shadow of the Smile the second, or is the second book?
No, In Your Keeping is the second. Shadow of the Smile is the one that just came out in June.
Okay, so let's go to, because I want to drill down into In Her Keeping, the book that I'm most familiar with, which I've read. And I have to admit, I was intrigued by the story of the Taggers, which probably has drawn in a number of people. But we'll jump to the most recent book here and talk about Shadow of Smile. Give us a synopsis, and then I'm going to have you tell us a little bit about Meredith and her mother, Anastasia, the central characters, or two of the central characters. I guess they would be the two most central characters. Is that right?
Yeah, they are. They are.
Tell us about Shadow of a Smile.
Well, Shadow of a Smile is about a woman who grows up believing that her father was killed shortly after she was born, and she grows up with a single mother. And when her mother dies unexpectedly of a heart attack at 52 years old, and Meredith is going through her mother's things, she learns that her mother's life was very different than she thought, and different than how she saw it on the surface. And she leaves behind some journals that, in the story, fill in Anastasia's point of view. And we go back and forth from 1992 and 1962 between mother and daughter, having similar experiences.
You know, I think it's been reported more so recently than in the past that situation where the background of the mystery of one's parents' lives is very different from the perception by the family. How is it that you came by the idea to write about a father whose background was not what it appeared to be?
Well, the first two books were based on experiences that I had or that somebody I knew closely had. And Shadow of a Smile was the first book that I wrote sort of deliberately. And so I sat down and consciously made the decisions about where the setting would be, who some of the characters would be, and a little bit of the way the plot would work. But I started by saying what authors often say, what if? You ask a what-if question. And my what-if question was, well, what if everything that I thought my whole life to be true turned out to be false? How might that impact me? So that's where I sort of got the idea of this past being different and roots being different than we thought. And then the other thing that writers are told is to write what you know. And I don't necessarily believe that. I think you should write what you're interested in or what you can find out about. But I've traveled across the country a lot by car, and I've lived in a number of different places. So I wanted to include some of those places that I love very much, like in Southern California and Chicago. And then I realized that Route 66 connects those two cities, and that kind of got me started thinking about trips across Route 66 30 years apart.
Well, hold that thought, because we're going to be taking a break, but when we come back, I want to drill down for just a bit, because I want to know a little bit about how your time in the Midwest and in California came into play, particularly in Shadow of a Smile, because you were drawing upon some of your experience, but as you say, you've created a whole new storyline that isn't necessarily related to your own experience. And we're going to learn more about that process. We're here with Valerie Joan Connors, and we'll be back with author Valerie Joan Connors right after this break.
Do your children know where their food comes from? At ConnectingFarmToFork.com, there's all kinds of ways to help your child understand how 300 million of us here in America stay nourished, clothed, and healthy. Activities, food facts, and farm visits help young people learn about America's hardworking farmers and have lots of fun doing it. Visit ConnectingFarmToFork.com today for a learning experience that'll really grow on you. ConnectingFarmToFork.com. brought to you by the people who care at Feedstuffs Food Link.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning at 8 a.m. and listen to the Doctor's Lounge, where you get a private insight into the conversations that doctors have amongst themselves. Join us Thursday, 8 a.m. every week.
Cook Immigration Partners is your passport through the immigration maze. Whether it's help with E-Verify in your business, or help in how to document a new employee under the new I-9 rules, or if you marry a foreign national, Cook Immigration Partners is your best choice for a legal advocate. Call us today at 866-286-6200. That's 866-286-6200. Or visit us on the web at www.immigration.net.
This is Peter Wallace, inviting you to listen every Sunday morning to Day One with inspiring preachers from America's mainline churches on americaswebradio.com.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Business Hour. We're here with author Valerie Joan Connors. She's the author of three novels, Give Me Liberty, Shadow of a Smile, and In Her Keeping. Not necessarily in that order, but we are talking about Shadow of a Smile before we get to In Her Keeping, the book that I want to drill down into, because I personally was very fascinated with much of the subject matter of that book. We were talking about Meredith, the central character in Shadow of a Smile, and her mother, Anastasia, who's a colorful character, if you will.
Yes.
And before the break, I said I wanted to touch on something that you brought up, go back and talk about the influence. We're talking about the influence of one's experiences as a fictional writer, drawing upon some of those experiences, and yet many fiction writers, not necessarily the better fiction writers, but in some cases, a writer develops that skill of being able to create whole new environments that aren't necessarily, and you know, this is arguably one of those situations where some psychologists might say your past is still the mother of invention about anything creative in the future. For purposes of talking about that balance between the two, let's talk about how your background as an upper Midwestern girl and woman, is it a coincidence that you would draw in that book upon and include California, and then Wisconsin is the region, the state that where some of the story takes place, not necessarily Michigan, your home state, but for all intents and purposes, there's a lot of similarities, a lot of sensibilities, a lot of upper Midwestern culture, and so tell us about the role that drawing upon those two regions, and when you were writing, did you see it that way? Did you see, like, I'm going to write about the experiences in California and capture some of that California culture, if you will, and when I make references to Wisconsin, I will capture some of that upper Midwestern sensibility. Did that come into play?
It does. Actually, in Give Me Liberty, the first part of it, before she goes to New York, it's set in upper Michigan, in Marquette, in the town where my mother grew up.
Oh,
and
okay. Yes.
Not far from where I grew up for the first 9 years of my life.
Because, in fact, it is okay, and it's it can be very good to draw upon what you know.
Oh, I mean, yes, yeah, absolutely.
It's not like you
absolutely.
That rule by some writers isn't a good rule to follow. It provides you with so much, you know. Yes,
absolutely. You should write what you know, but just not be limited by that. Yes, I wanted to include places I was familiar with so that I could remember what it felt like to be there and I could describe it better and describe the experiences better. I really liked the sharp contrast in weather between the harsh Midwestern winters and the constant summer of California. And since I was doing mother-daughter 60s, 90s, you know, back and forth across the country. I liked that stark contrast in the weather. But I also had some very clear images in my head from Southern California and the time I spent down there. So
so they're embodied in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about a little bit about Meredith, the central character, and then her mother, Anastasia, because you've created two very interesting characters.
Mm, thank you. Meredith is a sort of stoic person, and she actually gets called that at one point. For people who read the book will recognize that when it comes along. She is sort of hardworking and straight up, and she's a strong woman. Her mother has raised her by, she's been a hairdresser. They had a hair shop in their home, and she thinks that all her mother has ever done was work in the salon and take care of her. But she goes on vacation a couple of times a year to California for her health, she says, and doesn't ever talk very much more about that. And so as the story goes on, we find out really what Anastasia was up to and where she came from and what her past really was all about.
Now, and we're going to do this for a little bit in the course of our conversation, how much of the character that you depicted in Meredith draws upon your personal makeup, and did any part of Anastasia, was it derived from your own mother? We're not going to read too much into this, I think you have had an interesting personal life, and so it's interesting enough to draw from.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like your mother was interesting enough to draw from, and not everybody has that luxury, so to speak, of having a parent that you can build a character around.
Yeah, my mother was very interesting. But Anastasia isn't anything like my mother, really. And Anastasia is really almost a mirror image of Meredith. So Meredith has a lot of, well, it's written in the first person, and what most of us starting out writers do, whether we're trying to or not, is our own voice goes into the book and a lot of ourselves go in because that's what we know. So Meredith is like me in that, you know, the stability and hardworking and serious and a little stoic. But I wanted Anastasia to be almost the opposite of all that. I wanted her to be very emotional and not so logical and cerebral about her decision-making, and softer a little bit.
You know, I suppose that we don't have to wait to reveal this to our listeners, but one of the aspects of you as a professional writer that I find fascinating is that you're an accountant by training, a CPA, an operations senior management person with an architectural engineering firm, and we'll get into that. We'll touch upon that a little bit later. But as listeners hear you talk about these characters, in the case of Meredith, that very stable, very professional, very disciplined person. I mean, that's a part of you as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the author may be the more creative artist,
mm-hmm.
But you were able to cultivate an image of Meredith vis-a-vis some of your own personal experience. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. My mother was an artist, and my father is a musician. And it seems odd, it has always seemed odd to me, that I would find a career in accounting and software implementation and operations management, that sort of thing, because it seems so counter to my roots. But I'm also doing accounting-type work in a very creative environment. And so I think I've always been drawn to the creative side of things. And now that I'm writing, that really nurtures the creative side of my soul and makes me happier, and I feel more balanced in my life.
And there, you know, I mentioned at the top of the program that thousands, maybe tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands, certainly tens of thousands and probably hundreds of thousands and maybe even millions of people. And I only bother to repeat that because we're talking about a lot of people out there who have given some thought to some form of artistic expression, mm-hmm. and writing a book of some sort, whether it's mm-hmm. fiction or nonfiction, is something that a lot of people have thought about. And either by virtue of a failure of imagination or a failure of nerve, to borrow two concepts from the author Arthur C. Clarke, you know, people haven't quite crossed over the threshold to be able to cultivate their imagination in a way that they could put it down on paper, mm-hmm. or lack the discipline to do such, and or just didn't cultivate the nerve, didn't develop the nerve. You know, it really mm-hmm. Is a function of willpower in many cases. Mm-hmm. In your case, well, let's actually hold off, because I want to talk about that in a bit, where we can apply it to all three of your works. Let's talk about the book that I said I was drawn to, because mm-hmm. there is a major thread in the book, In Her Keeping. And that major threat, so that we don't keep it a mystery, is the animal sanctuary that the central character, Sylvia, encounters. It really is depicted by you in fascinating detail. And I may be overusing that word fascinating, but I mean to say interesting and engaging.
Thank you.
And I want you to talk about that book in particular because of the strength of that imagery associated with the sanctuary and the relationships between people and tigers, large cats, tigers specifically, as well as the people having relationships with other people. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we'll drill down into the book In Her Keeping. We're here with author Valerie Joan Connors. We'll be back with Valerie to learn more about her really, truly engaging books in just a bit.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options, such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
This is Michael Gannot with Insight to Israel. Every day, the Israeli Defense Force finds itself on the front line of the war with the militant arm of Islam. Surrounded by enemies from within and without, they fight for the only Jewish state. Military service is mandatory, ladies serving 2 years and men serving 3 right out of high school. While young people in other democracies are busy traveling or attending university, Israeli men and women gear up for basic training. In a world of heads of state, politicians, ambassadors, diplomats, and a leftist media, many times our voice at the grassroots level is drowned out. So we started an ongoing project called Hershey's for Heroes. Patriot conservatives from all over the U.S. are sending Hershey's chocolate bars with a note of thanks for defending Israel. Won't you join us by sending a sweet message to the IDF? For information, please see my Facebook page at Michael Gonneau. Thank you, God bless Patriot conservatives, and God bless Israel in her struggle for sovereignty and security.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Business Hour. I'm Ron Camacho, your host, and we're here with author Valerie Joan Connors. Valerie is the author of three novels, one of which is In Her Keeping, the other two of which are Give Me Liberty and Shadow of a Smile. And we've talked a little bit about Give Me Liberty and Shadow of a Smile, but we're going to drill down for a bit into the book In Her Keeping. And I alluded to this major thread of In Her Keeping, which is an animal sanctuary which has sheltered big cats, tigers in particular, that play a central role, and the relationship of the central character, Sylvia, with one particular tiger, but the tigers in general. And Valerie and I were chatting about the book. I volunteered that. Personally, I've always been very, very fascinated with big cats, and that through the years, looking at photographs of lions and tigers and cougars and panthers and leopards, with the influence of movies like Life of Pi, a computer-generated image, but a very well executed depiction of a beautiful tiger. When I read your book, Valerie, I had vivid imagery, and hence one of the reasons I think this will translate into a movie so well is because of the strength of some of those images. Not to mention the beauty of the North Carolina mountains.
Yeah.
And maybe cutting back to and from the city of Atlanta to juxtapose it with the serenity and the beauty of North Carolina. But the tigers are major stars, or will be, when you read this book. Tell us about how you came to be so influenced that the animal sanctuary would play a central part in the book.
Well, several years ago, my husband and I went up to the mountains in North Carolina for a long weekend. It was my birthday, and we wanted to get out of town and find a quiet place to just relax for a couple of days. And I was looking at the pamphlets in the bed and breakfast where we were staying, and I saw something called Tiger World, and had a picture of a tiger on the front, and I thought, well, that sounds like a fun thing to do. We'll check that out. So they do this thing called a cub encounter, where if you are there at the right time, because they only do it when the cubs are 8 to 10 weeks old, I think is the rule. I could be wrong about that. I think that's right. When they're big enough so that their immune systems aren't threatened by interaction with humans, but small enough that they can't, like, eat you when you get next to them. So I thought that sounded like great fun, too. So we went and we did this thing, and my husband and I spent probably 20 minutes inside a cage with a tiger cub that was about 20 pounds, and just the most adorable thing I'd ever seen in my life. And they asked me if I wanted to feed her a bottle, and I said, yeah, twist my arm. Of course I do. And so they brought in the bottle, and the cub jumped up on the bale of straw next to me and put her big old paws on my lap and was drinking this bottle, and I thought my heart would explode. It was just unbelievable. She was so beautiful, and I couldn't get that out of my head, and I knew that had to be the next book. It absolutely had to be. And so I started doing research about tigers in captivity and elsewhere, and I found that there's definitely some good guys and definitely some bad guys out there with respect to the tigers. And so that's what turned into the story. But in doing the research, I found out that maybe the experience I had with that tiger cub that was amazing and life-changing for me was not necessarily the best thing in the cub's mind, you know. Although our encounter was very closely supervised by two zookeepers, and it was, you know, very controlled environment. But there are people who have who raise litters of tiger cubs, taking them away from their mothers when they're 3 weeks old and drag them around the country to malls for photo opportunities. And that was one of the bad extremes.
This is one of the points in this conversation where we can go in a lot of different directions. I will share with listeners that Sylvia, the central character, is a woman who has wanted to have children for so long, mm-hmm. not been able to have children, and the relationship with the tiger cub is a such a fulfilling relationship mm-hmm. that it serves as the initial engagement to a relationship with the sanctuary, the animal sanctuary. And the executive director as well. There's romance as well. And you do, in my opinion, a great service to sharing the plight of animals and connectivity vis-a-vis the plight of these big cats by sharing some of the underbelly, which you alluded to, with people trying to raise wild animals as pets,
yeah.
but not really being very capable, and it leading to some pretty sad conditions mm-hmm. and some pretty tragic situations for humans, but more often for the wild animals, so that you've done your homework enough to share with readers what some of the downside is to the condition of animals, wild animals, whose habitats worldwide are shrinking, you know, condition that humans have brought on to the animals, and the sad but necessary role that animal sanctuaries play mm-hmm. in the survival
yeah.
of various species.
Yep.
And so when you talked about organizations which have animals, and quite honestly, from circuses that may not treat their animals very well, to businesses which have smaller tigers and lion cubs that you can play with in the mall,
mm-hmm.
Or various quote-unquote petting zoos. That's not always the best way to care for a wild animal in captivity, and yet while you share that underbelly of that plight of these wild animals, you share this very loving,
yes.
comforting, safe, aptly referred to as a sanctuary for these tigers in the book, and for that, I think you do a great service using the animal sanctuary as this central thread. And it's also this perfect vehicle to demonstrate how the central character, Sylvia, is able to transfer a great deal
mm-hmm.
of this passion to have a child and love that she's now focusing on one cub in particular, but also the big cats at the animal sanctuary
mm-hmm.
in general, which is really what the entire staff at the animal sanctuary is doing, is lovingly care for these animals. You have enough detail in the book Valerie, I'm wondering, it could not have all come from research, and I would be quite amazed if it came from one visit. Did you have multiple visits, mm-hmm. and is that how you were able to have the degree of detail when it came to the care of these animals?
Yes. I did a lot of online research, but I also visited another tiger sanctuary in Texas after I had the complete first draft written, and I wanted to check some facts. And so I went out there to visit another sanctuary, and I got some really good details from that visit. But what really did my heart good, because, you know, of course, you don't want to see beautiful, magnificent animals like that behind bars, but unfortunately, that's the way it is. But the Texas sanctuary, we took a walk around the sanctuary with a guide, and there was a section of cages sort of far away from the others. And the person who was doing the tour said, that tiger is getting agitated, walking, pacing back and forth. He doesn't like people, and we want him happy, so we're not going to go over there. And I thought that was very
and you have that
telling.
that exact language,
yes.
in the book.
Yeah.
And that's the degree to which good animal sanctuaries are sensitive to their animals.
Is, yes.
They know when they're not happy. Mm-hmm. And much like you would with your own children, you want them to be happy.
Absolutely.
You want them to be comfortable and feel secure. Tell us a little bit about how much Sylvia Holt's life is at all related to the life of Valerie Joan Connors.
Well, I also always wanted to have children and don't have any. And so that piece is very much me. There are certain aspects to her personality that are mine as well. But that was the first book that I wrote in the first-person point of view. And so when I'm saying I all the time, it really makes it a lot easier to interject things that are real for me.
Well, it's a beautiful story. And to learn how the plight, there's drama associated with the plight, not just of the animals, but of the animal sanctuary and the livelihoods of the people that run the animal sanctuary. And you'll have to read the book in her keeping to learn what that outcome is. And also, I should say, stay tuned for the movie, because I think this book will transfer to a film beautifully. When we return, I want Valerie to share with us a little bit about the discipline that goes into writing a novel. Share with us a little bit about your routine. I'm certain there are listeners out there wondering, like, what does she do? Does she just wake up in the morning and spend 8 hours cranking it out? Or how does she do it? We're here with Valerie Joan Connors, author of 3 novels. And we'll be back with Valerie to learn more about how she does it right after this break.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that allergy season in Georgia is year-round? Beginning in July through November, ragweed is the predominant pollen. But February through May, tree pollen causes allergy symptoms. Grass pollen occurs from mid-May through the beginning of July. If you suffer from daily nasal congestion, sneezing, runny nose, headache, ear clogging, or popping, or a chronic cough, these symptoms may be due to allergy and not infection. You should also think of allergies if there is no fever, chills, or colored mucus. Treatment should include nasal salt water sprays over the counter or antihistamines that do not cause drowsiness. If you have persistent headaches, a decrease in your sense of smell, or nosebleeds, you should see an ear, nose, and throat physician. Please join me on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
Hi, I'm Paisley McDonald, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my show, At Home with Paisley, every week, Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern, for practical advice and stylish living for your home and office.
Certification. Do you know why becoming a certified healthcare consumerism specialist is more important than ever in 2014? Adding this specialized designation to your credentials tells employers or your clients that you understand how much our industry has changed and how to navigate that change successfully. IHC University's certification program offers coursework both online and live at their biannual forum conference series, and testing is completed online. Reaffirm your position as a leader in the health and benefit management industry. Download our certification overview and learn more at www.theihcc.com. That's www.theihcc.com.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Business Hour. We're here with Valerie Joan Connors, author of three novels, Give Me Liberty, In Her Keeping, and Shadow of a Smile. And we have been talking about the book In Her Keeping for the last few moments. But now I want to turn to the art, the science, the discipline of novel writing. How do you do it, Valerie? Mm-hmm. How did you begin? How has your method maybe been refined or different from when you began? Do you wake up in the morning? Do you have a mindset that I'm going to sit down and crank out a few sentences, an outline, a few pages? Tell us about your process.
Okay. I call myself a binge writer because I have a full-time job and a long commute, and so during normal business days, there's absolutely no chance of doing any writing. And on the weekend, I do a little bit of writing on the weekend, but I also have other responsibilities that take up some of that time. So I take vacation time and sick time and holiday time anywhere that I have a block of time, and I do what you said. I get up, I make a cup of coffee, and I go straight to my desk, and I'll stay there all day long, and the next thing I know, it's nighttime, and I've been there for 12 hours, and I'm so immersed in the story, and it's wonderful, wonderful, wonderful.
And in the very beginning, Valerie, you know, so many people are taught to outline a paper, mm-hmm. outline their thoughts for a given presentation, mm-hmm. outline a film script, mm-hmm. But sometimes it just pours out as mm-hmm. Descriptions of scenes that turn into chapters. How does it happen for you?
Yeah, I try making outlines, but I don't follow the outlines. I'm kind of what we call a seat-of-the-pants writer. I just follow the characters where they take me. So I'll sit down and have, you know, a week of time or 5 days of time where I'll write every single day for 10 or 12 hours. And then I might not get back to it for a month or more. Editing I can do in a little piece of time, but the writing I need to sit down and just get immersed in it.
Is it entirely word processing?
Yes.
Are you a product of modern... or a user of modern technology? You know, I do a considerable amount of writing, non-fictional mm-hmm. writing, and I couldn't live without the computer. I do like to write longhand now and then, but it gets transferred to the computer and into Microsoft Word format.
Yeah.
Do you do any handwriting? Do you find yourself?
No, I can't write fast enough. And so the keyboard goes really, really fast. Because what happens for me is that because there are big blocks of time in between these writing binges, that it's percolating in the back of my head. When I get a chance to sit down, I've got a lot to dump out. So,
you have been self-published and also worked with a publisher.
Yes.
Tell us about the pros and cons mm-hmm. of those two.
Uh-huh. Give Me Liberty was self-published. It was also my attempt to learn how to write a book. I was figuring out a lot of things as I went along, and I think it's an okay book. I think it's a wonderful story, and I plan to go back and do some rewrites and some edits to it and re-release it because I think it's worth it. In Her Keeping brought me my first traditional publishing contract, and that comes along with a professional editor and, you know, a little bit of marketing advice and better distribution, that sort of thing. And now I'm with a small publisher with Shadow of a Smile called Dietz Publishing, that's based in Marietta. And they just did Shadow of a Smile. Bellbridge Books did the Innerkeeping.
And you've found that working with a publisher mm-hmm. has provided a measure of support that is very mm-hmm. helpful to you.
Yes.
A lot of people don't give any thought to the fact that you have the creative expression, which is the writing itself, mm-hmm. and in your case, a novel. Mm-hmm. But then you have getting that creative expression out to people who might want to appreciate your work.
Yes, that's a business.
So distribution and mm-hmm. promotion and, as you say, a good professional editor is mm-hmm. extremely helpful as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Here's where we talk about the two professions of Valerie Joan Connors. You help to manage the operations and architectural engineering firm, and I want to touch for just a moment on what it's like to balance out essentially two very distinct professional careers. CDH Partners is a respected architectural engineering firm, and so you have to be a highly structured, disciplined professional. Not a lot of room for artistic expression, or maybe a little, but not like
not
writing
too much.
A novel. So tell us what it's like to balance those two professions.
Yeah. My day job at CDH Partners is a full-time job. I have a two-hour commute. It takes up a lot of my time, but it provides me with a living. And writing, to make a living writing, is not easy. Some people have done it, and some people do it partially, but that's a big step. And in fact, my boss, Bill, said, "Now, if you sell a million books, you still can't quit." And I said, no, I would never quit. I'm staying here no matter what.
How nice is it to be wanted like that?
I know.
Needed and wanted.
I know. It's wonderful. But I also told him that if I sell 2 million books, we're going to have to talk.
Well, and in fact, I think listeners out there need to be reminded that a lot of very successful writers of fiction and nonfiction, even some who sell many hundreds of thousands or as you just mentioned, a million books, that could get you by for a while, but you actually may need another source of stability, financial and otherwise, in your life. And so you are very lucky that you have that as an anchor. Mm-hmm. And in some sense, I view this as self-actualization. Mm-hmm. You know, you have the profession which leverages some of your interest and more of your aptitudes to provide that foundation and that stability, and then you have the creative writing to follow your heart and your head and be that passionate artistic expression, and then achieve somewhat of an overall balance, which is to me at the core of being self-actualized, is mm-hmm. being able to have pursuits that you immerse yourself in, mm-hmm. and then work at achieving a balance.
Yeah.
You are also the president of the Atlanta Writers Club. Tell us a little bit about the Atlanta Writers Club's mission.
Yes. In fact, this morning I went into my files and I found their mission statement. The Atlanta Writers Club was established in 1914. We celebrated our 100th anniversary back in April. And their charter says that they were established to bring about a helpful and more intimate acquaintance among Atlanta writers and to promote their talents and market their writings. And I think we're really still doing that very same thing today, 100 years later. I found the Atlanta Writers Club at the Decatur Book Festival back in 2010. I just finished Give Me Liberty, and I had no idea what to do next. And so I said, "Patrick, why don't we go to this little book festival that's down in Decatur this weekend?" It was Labor Day back in 2010. And so we went downtown, and I quickly realized that this little book festival gets about 85,000 people through it. And I've since...
it's considered one of the best in the country.
Yes, and it's wonderful, and it's coming up in just a few weeks. But I walked up to their tent, and somebody stepped out and said, "Are you a writer?" And I I couldn't answer. I just stood there staring at them, and Patrick pushed me forward and said, yes, she just finished a book. So I joined them and immediately got on the board, because why would I want to be just a member of something when I can run it?
And what have you gotten out of that membership, and what do you think that people can expect from being a member?
Oh, it's wonderful. There's so much to learn. We have two speakers every month who are published authors or agents or editors or somebody in the publishing business. We have two writers' conferences a year, and we have a lot of wonderful people and a lot of support, which is very important.
What are membership dues?
$40 a year. It's the best entertainment value in town.
No question about it. I think you could almost charge $400 a year. I'm not suggesting that you do that, but I can't think of a better professional membership return on investment than $40 for those 24 programs plus the two semi-annual
the writers conferences. We charge a little more for the conferences, but definitely worth it.
And not only that, the professional fellowship in which you can learn from other writers. I would encourage any listeners, and in fact listeners can learn more about the Atlanta Writers Club by going to www.atlantawritersclub.com.
.org.
Mm-hmm. And they can learn more about what you're up to vis-a-vis your website, www.valeriejoanconnors.net. Is that correct?
I'm .com also.
Oh, you are .com.
Yeah. ValerieJoanConnors.com, and it's C-O-N-N-O-R-S. Some people like to put an E in there.
C-O-N-N-O-R-S. Mm-hmm. Valerie, I want to thank you for taking the time to be a guest on the Business Hour. It's been fascinating.
It's been great. Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to the Business Hour here at America's Web Radio. We're on Fridays from 10 to 11 a.m. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you on the radio next week.